Sairam, dear listeners, you're tuned to the Asia stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony for this special Thursday live broadcast. And like on every Thursday, here I am Arvind from Team Radio Sai, coming for the afternoon satsang. Of course, today we are a bit delayed, but we are sure excited and pepped up about today's Satyam Shivam Sundaram. Joining me today, as every week, is Prem. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind and Sairam to all listeners of Radio Sai. We hope you enjoyed that wonderful interview which just preceded our afternoon satsang. You know, it was indeed a beautiful interview. You know, it just comes to show that Swami's story, as we are talking about it, is not just confined to those 85, 90 years of Swami's earthly, this one, because, you know, every devotee who came to Swami was touched by Swami and carried a part of Swami in their own lives. So,
and continues to carry him.
Right. And I think all these stories of devotees being inspired by Swami to do good work and finding fulfillment in that process is also part of Satyam Shivam Sundaram, you know.
And naturally, Prem, everything actually becomes part of his story. And I remember that famous Sanskrit poem, or was it a Hindi poem, in which, you know, it is said that if Mother Saraswati, that is the goddess of learning herself, were to take all the land in the world as paper, use all the trees in the world as pens, and use all the water and all the oceans of the world as ink, even then she won't be able to capture the glory of the leelas and stories of the Lord. So yes, Satyam Shivam Sundaram is not a book, it is not some episodes, it is happening day to day in the lives of millions of people across the globe. It is as real and as present as this moment.
Very true. You know, the other day I was just listening to a discourse by a very pious gentleman. You know, they do this Harikatha. It was at the end of a 7-day discourse. You know, they have that Saptaha kind of a thing.
Correct.
So he said, every time I do a Saptaha, every time I speak about the Lord, the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, at the end of it I feel, oh God, I've told so little. You know, there's so much to say and so little I've said. And I think we might go on and speak for days together, but it is very true, you know, knowing Swami and having seen Swami and still seeing Swami, Swami is still revealing himself to us. We all are in the process of, you know, seeing him completely. We have not seen him to what he is. I think that is the feeling which all of us are left with.
Yeah, because I feel the only way you have to see Swami completely is through the experience. And definitely Shravanam, that is the first form among the 9 forms of worship, definitely is very, very helpful. In fact, that is what was the advice that was given to sage Vedavyasa,
right,
the great compiler of the Vedas, the person who wrote the Mahabharata, the person who is responsible for the Upanishads. So many things, and yet he was so discontent. He was not having an inner peace. And the advice that sage Narada gave to him was that you have not written the story of the Lord. Relive the story of the Lord and you will find the peace you are looking for. I'm remembering this because, Prem, yesterday I was exactly in this kind of a situation, you know. Well, not exactly like Vyasa, but similar situation. I was feeling a bit low. You know, things everywhere seem to be going wrong. If you are staying in India, you will know that there's a lot of unrest on the political front. You know, there's a division of the state going on. At the same time, they say that the center, the ruling parties are not proper. They're not. There's daily bashing going on all the news channels. Apart from that, the rupee seems to be falling. The stock markets are collapsing. Added to that, you know, there are no sufficient rains in this part of the country, while there are floods and people dying in the other part of the country. So many things happening. I was feeling, you know, a kind of unrest within me. And I was really feeling so non-peaceful, you know. It was so magical that as I started reading these stories in preparation for today's satsang, a kind of calm descended on me. Such beautiful stories. They you know, they reinforce your faith in a manner that you just cannot comprehend. You just don't know what is it about them. Sometimes those stories are what you have already heard, and yet hearing them calms you and gives you a kind of fortitude and faith that you would otherwise never have had.
Very true. You know, every time I go through the same feeling that you're talking about, you know, especially about the country, I'm reminded of that discourse which Swami gave in, I think, sometime in 60s, where Swami concludes that discourse with this very, very powerful statement. He said, you know, be assured that nothing can touch this mother of Sanatana Dharma. And, you know, that is a reassuring thing, of course, how discouraged we are. And as you said, you know, that thought that Swami is here, and Swami is the one who is, you know, the Bharata Bhagyavidata, as we spoke the last week, the one who is the dispenser of the destiny of the people of this land. I think that itself is enough to lift all our spirits.
Yes, naturally, Prem, because the year that we have now arrived to in the Satyam Shivam Sundaram, 1947, okay, it was a period of great unrest everywhere. The World War had just concluded. The whole world almost was in shambles. India in particular, too, you know, was gearing up for independence. And though we won independence on August 15, 1947, it was a period of great unrest because the partition took place.
There were rioting. The task of bringing all the provinces together, you know, the kingdoms and provinces together under one country.
At the same time, there was this partition that was going on. There were riots all around the country. People were being killed. And there was so much of, you know, lack of peace, unrest. There was so much of unrest. And amidst all that, a brilliant light was shining in one remote hamlet, in one corner of Andhra Pradesh, in Anantapur. And just visualizing that situation itself makes us feel peaceful, because for even at that time, it was Swami and Puttaparthi that was the light amidst the unrest. And even today, it continues to be. Swami and Puttaparthi continue to be the light amidst all this chaos and unrest. And I really found it true reading the stories.
Very true. And that's why we are so fascinated and excited about doing this satsang on Satyam Shivam Sundaram. As Arvind told you, we are in the year 1947. We spoke of that, you know, epoch-making letter which Swami wrote to his brother. And now I think we are in that stage where Swami is also traveling. People are also coming to Puttaparthi. And, you know, one of the features of this period, especially in Satyam Shivam Sundaram, Professor Kasturi mentions, he said Swami came out as a very, very different person. You know, that was a time when there were a lot of saints, sadhus and people who, you know, fakirs around. But here was Swami. Swami was very different. The way he dressed was different. The way he appeared was very different for the people, you know, the rajas and maharajas who had seen saintly people. Swami was appearing different. And not only was Swami this very tender and delicate looking teenager, but Swami was also a strict disciplinarian. You know, he was coming out as a person who was very clear of what he wanted, what he expected from people who would come to him. And that was a feature of Swami's personality then and even now.
Exactly. In our last discussion, we had reached the point where, you know, the first Akhanda Bhajan was held towards the end of 1946. Well, before we plunge into 1947, there are one or two incidents, wonderful ones, that happened in 1946. Dear listeners, let us assure you that the next 1 hour or so is going to be filled with incidents and stories galore, because that is what Swami did in those days at even the physical level.
Right.
So, to start off with, you know, a lot of families during those times made their way to Swami, and those families have become kind of immortal today. You know, we have the Kuppam family, we have the families from Gindi,
The Yadalam family
from Bukkapatnam. Like that, there was one more family, one of Gummagutta Subbarao, who was also from Bukkapatnam. The amazing thing was the way Swami entered his life in 1946. It happened during the Dasara. So before we go into his story, I think we should just briefly talk of how Dasara was.
Right.
Actually, 1946 was the first ever Dasara in the Mandir, in the Patha Mandir, the old Mandir, which was the new Mandir then.
Right.
So for Dasara, tents and other Shamianas, you know, they were brought from Bangalore because there was no accommodation facilities at all. The hall which Swami called as his mandir could accommodate only about 20 or 30 people. And so tents were put up all around, and vessels had to be brought for cooking. At the same time, for the first time in Puttaparthi, a generator was brought to provide continuous electricity supply, you know, for the function. It was planned as a 9-day event, the Dasara. The problem was, when the generator was brought, they had not brought sufficient fuel. So very fast it ran out of fuel and they did not know what to do. And guess what? Swami asked for a drum of water, put his finger into it and just made a few circles in the water and said, feed the generator. And thus it was that a miracle was performed so casually. That is one more beautiful thing about Swami. He doesn't make a fuss or an ado about the miracles that he does. So without fuss, the drum filled with water was poured into the generator, and the generator ran for all the 9 days, you know, providing electricity in this. And for all the 9 days, there was a procession. A palanquin was made, a regal palanquin, decked with flowers, and a really huge one. It might have measured about 3 meters by 2 meters in size. Right. It was so big that it was often, on some days it was carried on a bullock cart. And if the procession had to go far, you know, for example, on a few days the procession went as far up to Bukkapatnam. That is about 5 kilometers away from Puttaparthi.
Okay.
On those days the palanquin was placed on a jeep. So every day there used to be this procession, and in the evening, in the morning there would be worship and bhajans, after which Swami would feed everyone with a sumptuous feast. So this was the schedule for the 9 days.
Okay.
And many interesting things happened during the procession. I'm sure, Prem, you would have heard about how, you know, once when Swami was going in a procession, Swami suddenly stopped and said, turn back, and okay. asked the procession to be taken in another direction.
Okay.
So they saw that this direction was heading back to the mandir from where they came from. So they wondered, why is Swami terminating the procession so abruptly? And when they reached the mandir, they caught hold of 15 people who were trying to jump across the wall and run away. These people were actually robbing all the people's belongings that were there. They were caught. They apologized. They said they were not thieves. It was just the temptation that they couldn't overcome. So Swami forgave them and took a promise from them that they would never do it again. And in that manner, you know, it was a win-win. The robbers benefited. And at the same time, the devotees too were saved from this robbery. So such interesting things happened during the procession. Another thing that we often read about is how Swami would pluck the flowers that were decking the palanquin and throw them. And these flowers would change into medallions and lockets. I'm sure you heard of that.
Right. I think even Kasturi writes about that. Even as late as one of the dasharas he was part of, not the first or second one, even in that he says that Swami plucked flowers from the garland he was wearing and throwing in each one and getting lockets of, you know, having the image of Swami and of Shirdi Baba. And, you know, even the Kuppam family's account of Swami's early dashra used to be very beautiful. How that every palanquin used to be unique. One used to be of a peacock, one of a swan, or, you know, every one...
The shape of the one
with a huge om. I think that's a picture which is very common.
Correct. Om in the background.
In the background.
And if it'll be a wonderful sight to see these pictures. Yes, now coming back to why the Dasara came up. So it was during one such procession, you know, we said about Gumagutta Subbarao. He was a devotee of Radha Krishna.
Okay.
That is that form of Krishna which is associated with Radha.
Right.
And when his wife came to know of Shirdi Baba, she became a staunch follower of Shirdi Baba. He did not like this. He did not like his wife going to some Muslim fakir and offering her devotion and dedication there. That was when he had a dream in which he saw Shirdi Baba. And Shirdi Baba slowly transformed into his beloved Radha Krishna.
Okay.
That was when he got convinced about the unity of his dear Krishna and Shirdi Baba. And so he had accepted Shirdi Baba. And now, you know, again, his wife Tipamma, she got to know of this Balasai, this young Sai in Puttaparthi. So, And they had settled in Bukkapattanam, which is very close to Puttaparthi.
Right.
So she visited Swami and she became a staunch follower of Swami. Now this was something that her husband could not take. He said, okay, that Muslim fakir, okay, and he proved at least he was an elderly person. So this young, you know, he's a chit of a boy and you're now telling that he's the same. What is this? Just because some Baba says something, don't run behind all this. And that was his opinion. But his wife was staunch and fixed. And so, this Subbarao came up with a condition. He said, I will not come for the Dasara procession that you are calling. I will not be part of that. If that Sai Baba, that lad of yours wants, let him come to this. Let him bring the procession to Bukkapattanam.
Mm-hmm.
He did not stop at that. He said, when he comes in the procession, he should stop at our house, get down, enter our house, go to the puja room, and partake the prasadam that has been kept there. You know, then I will believe that he is God. He simply thought, I'll put a very, you know, rigorous condition which very unlikely to be fulfilled. But to his shock, that same day, Swami's palanquin was taken in a procession, not on a bullock cart, but on a jeep.
Okay.
And the jeep comes to Bukkapattanam. And in the evening, as the jeep is passing through the village, Swami stops at his home, gets down, without an explanation, walks straight into the puja room, that is the altar, and takes the sweet that had been placed there for the Lord, consumes the whole thing, then turns around, comes straight to Subbarao and says, calling him by name, you know, the name,
okay,
says, Subbarao, are you satisfied now? Such was his shock that he simply collapsed unconscious. He just could not believe the sequence of events that had happened. He was so shocked that Swami had to materialize Vibhuti and revive him. But then it must be said to the credit of Subbarao that that instant he became Swami's devotee and he had a very fond corner in his heart for Swami. Swami too had a very fond corner in his heart for Subbarao. In fact, it is said that on a few occasions after that Dasara in 1946, Swami would simply walk from Puttaparthi to Bukkapattanam,
okay,
and go to Subbarao's home.
Mm-hmm.
It would be late in the night. Subbarao would already be asleep. So Swami would go and adjust and lie down next to Subbarao on the same cot.
My God.
And imagine when Subbarao wakes up next morning, he sees Swami by his side and he's so thrilled because he knows it's his Lord. So he would try to get up silently without waking up Swami, run and get the hot water ready for Swami's bath, and then wake up Swami and Swami would go have his bath. In the meanwhile, there would be complete confusion and chaos in Puttaparthi with Ishwaramma raising alarm that Swami is not there. Where is Swami? Where is Swami? People would search all around and then they would get to know that Swami has gone to Subbarao's home in Bukkapattanam. And this happened on several occasions like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so beautiful. On one occasion, you know, Subbarao had a dream,
mm-hmm,
in which Swami came and told him, I am coming today with guests. Mm-hmm. Keep food ready. So immediately, Subbarao and his wife spent the whole day in the kitchen, because when Swami comes, he comes with his whole entourage. So they expected at least 20 people to come. So they cooked food for 20 people for the evening and Swami does not turn up. So what else? They just go to bed. Next day early in the morning, Swami turns up.
Okay.
And he has with him an entourage of 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
The Dasara has just concluded and all the devotees, he has just got them off here. And you know, Subbarao is shocked. He said, Swami, we have cooked, but it's last night's food. And Swami, we have cooked only for 20 people. Swami says, no problem. Goes in, just taps on the vessels, and it's steaming hot, fresh food, which is sufficient for 100 people and even more. In fact, Subbarao and his wife, both of them get so many compliments from the guests saying, how amazing that so early in the morning you cooked such tasty food for 100 people. Because 100 people in those days was an unimaginable crowd. So such were the experiences. In fact, I believe that Swami promised Subbarao that the people in the Gumagutta family, they would all have their last life because of that beautiful association that they shared with Swami. See the beauty of the Lord, you know. In an instant, he can give deliverance.
Really beautiful, you know, especially that incident of, you narrated how he went into Swami's house. You know, here was Swami doing something to enter into the heart of a person.
Hmm.
And then you followed it up with so many incidences where Swami made sure that he secures that place.
Hmm.
And I'm reminded of what one of my classmates once shared with me, of how Swami visited their house when, you know, his grandfather's house actually.
Okay.
You know, it seems he, Swami, was being invited to that person's house for a long time.
Mm.
And Swami kept saying that, I will come one day. And one particular trip when Swami visited the town where this family was staying, Swami called his grandfather and said, I'm coming to your house.
Okay,
all of a sudden, and he said, I'm coming tomorrow. So they were getting everything ready, they were getting the house cleaned, and all the daughters and sons of that of my
family
were together and cooking for Swami. And as expected, Swami arrived before expected time.
Okay.
You can, and literally everybody was running around, and then they realized that Swami was early for lunch, and the lunch was still being prepared. So they didn't know what to do, and they were just showing Swami around the house, taking him to the garden, and
spending time.
Just killing time. And somebody got an idea. They said, Swami, will you come and visit our puja room? And as an act of sanctifying the place of worship. Swami said, yeah, puja room, come, take me there.
Mm.
And so they took Swami to the puja room, and standing there, Swami asked them, do you have a pen? Do you have a marker pen? And they're wondering why Swami is asking for a marker pen. So they ran around and they got one of those marker pens. And Swami told them, on this wall, write today's date. Okay, they said, okay. And they wrote the day's date. And Swami said, right beside it, Swami visited our house. Okay, in the puja room. So they said, they were very happy that Swami was, you know, in front of Swami, they're getting an opportunity to document this. So they wrote there, Swami visited our house. And just then, Swami turned to one of the daughters of that person and looked at her into her eyes and he said, henceforth, you will remember this day as the day Swami visited your house, not as the day your husband passed away.
Oh.
It seems many years on the same day, her husband had passed away. And, you know, in all this thing, they'd completely forgotten about it. And nobody had even told that to Swami. But here was Swami, you know, clearly removing an event of sorrow and replacing it with such a joyous moment.
That is what Swami does, you know. He replaces our tears with more tears.
Really?
The only thing is, the tears of sorrow are gone and tears of joy well up. Tears of gratitude. Because you know that once you are safe and secure in Swami's hands, nothing can happen. In fact, another incident that happened immediately after Dasara.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after the Dasara that we spoke about in 1946, Swami left for Mysore.
Okay.
Swami was a grand tourer those days. So he left for Mysore. And then the festival of Deepavali came. You know, when the festival of Deepavali came, people missed Swami. Swami's presence in Puttaparthi. So they did the worship, they did the puja, all that had to be done. And but there was that sense of sorrow in their heart that Swami is not here. And when all the citizens of Puttaparthi went to sleep at night, somewhere around 1 o'clock in the morning, they hear sounds of a motorcade.
Mm-hmm.
And they also see lights at a distance, somewhere beyond the village of Karnata Nagipalli. So that was the only existing road then. So they suddenly understood, realized that here was Swami returning back to Puttaparthi.
Okay.
So they thought that was a motorcade because Swami would come in the cart till Karnata Nagipalli, and from there, then on it's either by bullock cart or on foot.
Right. And you can see it from the distance, the car turning in. And
yeah, the road.
Right.
So they all rushed. So when they rushed there, not everybody, many who woke up rushed to the spot. In front of their eyes, they saw that the cars that appeared to be coming were just gone. And the sound, everything ceased. The whole thing itself was an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that people wondered whether they were dreaming, whether they were sleepwalking. Because they could have sworn that they saw the motorcade. But then nothing came. So they were wondering what happened. And by the time they returned to the village, it was break of dawn. And they started the morning worship in the mandir. You know, even as early as 1946, even within an year of building the Patha Mandiram, Swami had ensured that whether he is physically there or not, the puja goes on in the mandir.
Okay.
But today when they were doing the puja, something very strange and interesting they saw. They saw that there was a cobra sitting in the altar.
Right.
And this cobra was silvery white. And it just sat still. So they were also thrilled that this is something very special. Who has seen a silver colored cobra? Everybody started bowing to it, offering coconuts, offering kumkum, haldi. And the surprising thing that was that though there was a huge crowd that was gathering and doing all this, the cobra did not seem to get scared, nor did it hiss. It accepted all the offerings and was there till about 3 in the afternoon. After which it slithered away. All the residents were thrilled that it was Swami in this form who came to bless them on Deepavali day. And the story does not end here.
Okay.
In Mysore, Swami was at the home of Karunamba Ramamurthy.
Okay.
And she recalls that Swami suddenly fell into a trance at night. They assumed that it was a trance because it was not sleep, because he would not wake up in the morning at all.
Mm-hmm.
They are wondering what happened, and Swami is sleeping through the day. And they say Swami woke up at some time about 6 in the evening. It was as if Swami left there as a cobra and took the time needed to travel by a superfast car back, and he woke up and then carried on with the other activities in Mysore. So that was what happened during Deepavali.
This particular incident, there's another very light moment which happened.
Huh?
Because the snake was there and it was, you know, not scared of the people who are gathering around. And usually snakes are very scared, you know, they would never stand in a place where there's a crowd.
Correct.
So when they saw the snake being there, they thought that they could worship it. So that's when all the ladies started bringing coconuts and kumkum. In fact, some even scattered kumkum on the snake.
On the snake, yes.
And started worshiping. And the snake was still. It was just accepting all the worship. And you know, Professor Kasturi notes that one particular lady came and started squabbling. You know, when they offer coconuts, there was a priest who was breaking and giving back the coconuts as prasadam.
They give back one half as prasadam.
Right.
Yeah.
And this one lady started fighting that the coconut I gave was bigger and you're giving me a smaller piece.
Okay.
You know, in all the crowd, you just get one piece of the coconut, right? Not necessarily the one which you offered.
So
she said, no, I offered a bigger one and you're giving me a small one. And you see, that was the only time the snake hissed in anger.
yes. I remember reading that, yeah. That's a nice thing. So, there also, apart from being like the loving mother, the strict father and Swami side was also seen.
And as devotees, we also stick to our own little-mindedness. A lot of beautiful stories are yet to come, and you know, in that year, that period which you have told. But before that, we'll just take a short break and we'll continue talking about Swami's beautiful incidents during that period.
Oh,
it's again one of those beautiful songs from that series Geetamlu, Satisai Geetamlu, and one of the songs which the Kuppam family used to compose, and some songs which Swami himself composed, and they all tuned and sang.
Yeah, speaking of Kuppam family, you know, the members of the family, I forget his name anyway, the name is not important, but they said that they had one person who was a very good composer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, their visit to Puttaparthi, they were very thrilled about their visit to Puttaparthi because they would get a chance to see Swami. But even Swami would apparently be very excited because they would come with new compositions, mm-hmm. and they would sing it very well too. In fact, he would not want them to leave Puttaparthi itself. In the May of 1947, we discussed last year, and I mean in the last satsang, how it was in the May of 1947, Swami wrote that historic letter to his brother.
Right.
In the same May of 1947, the members of the Kuppam family were in Puttaparthi, and they were in Puttaparthi because Swami was not ready to let them go back home. He used to tell them, you stay here. Why do you want to go? In fact, in that May, there were many children in that family, you know, I think about 3 girls and 4 boys or something like that, about 7 to 8 children. And 3 of them had an exam, the SSLC examination, secondary school leaving certificate examination, that is called 10th grade. They had to write that exam, so they said, Swami, we have to go. So Swami said, okay, you can go. But now, you know, they were worried because they have not studied anything for the exam. They'll be going and within a day, they'll have to write their exams. Swami said, you don't worry, waved his hand and created 2 stamp-sized photographs of himself. And he told them, you go and paste these photographs on your examination pad and then don't worry, I will take care. And though in a physical sense he didn't do what he did for Ramesh and Suresh, they say that the exams went by like a breeze. And it was almost as if exactly what they had just glanced at, those questions had come, and they seemed to have an exceptional memory. And they did very well in their exams, and they have no doubts in knowing that the person who did it for them was that little person in that little photograph that they had stuck on their examination pads.
You know, something quite similar to this is what Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram narrates about her family. You know, may not be exactly during that time. She says when one of her aunts comes to Parthi, Swami doesn't let her go back.
Okay.
You know, Swami says, no, you have to stay for some more time. No, Dashara is coming, you have to stay. Birthday is coming, you have to stay. And eventually she says, Swami, I've left my children alone and they have exams. And, you know, I have to go and I can't leave them alone for so long. Swami says, no, they'll take care of themselves and I'm with them, I will take care of them and all that. So Swami writes a letter to those children saying that, don't worry, I'm there with you. Don't miss your mother. And that's the essence of the letter Swami writes. And in that letter, Swami actually describes many of the events which have happened in that house. Saying that yesterday you put more water in the rice, you know, day before yesterday you forgot to do this, you forgot to lock to this one. Giving very, very small incidences, showing them that, you know, I'm always with you. And then in the last part of the letter, Swami says that in spite of all this, if you don't believe that I'm with you, the dog in your house, just think of it as when it comes in the night, the dog will become God and it'll protect you.
Oh, wow.
And you know, this is, I think, a very, very common thing where Swami used to be so obsessed when people come in those days, Swami would never allow them to go. Invariably, they will come for 3 days, 4 days, and would never go back till a month or so, you know.
This brings one more facet about Swami, you know, that he's like the God of small things. I would love to use that phrase for him because it is not that Swami has done huge, huge things. It's not that every devotee who has come has been cured of cancer or has been, you know, some has faced or experienced a stupendous miracle which is just jaw-dropping or eye-opening. Of course, Swami has done those things. But most of the people we speak to even today, Swami won their hearts over by little things. Small things that you know that it has to be somebody special if they have to do these small things for me. Small things, I mean, he may do things which may mean nothing or which may be very small for the world. But it means the world for the person for whom he does that. That is what we had discussed in one satsang.
Very true. You know, I can't help but narrate one small incident which one of our seniors narrated. Of, you know, how exactly this, you know, very small things. We are small people, have small fears and small apprehensions. And how Swami responds even to that. You know, when he was a student.
Okay.
That was the time when Swami was talking to him every day. And when you are in that phase, you have to tell everything to Swami. What you did in the morning, what you did in this one, what happened in college. Swami will ask.
In fact, you are also searching for as many things to tell Swami, right, because Swami exactly. is lending his ear.
Yes. And Swami also will ask for all trivialities of, you know, of your daily happenings.
Hmm.
And during that time, for some reason, you know, he had to travel by a scooter to take somebody to the hospital or something. Some errand came up and, you know, in the process, they met with an accident and he injured his leg. So, you know, he had this band-aid and he knew that Swami is going to ask why this happened. So he knows that if Swami asks and he says, this is what happened, and Swami will get upset with the warden and Swami will get upset with the other boy who took him on the scooter.
Hmm.
Okay, so he knew that if he is going to narrate this incident, he is going to get those people into problem.
Hmm.
So when he was sitting with Swami in Swami's presence, mentally he was telling Swami, Swami, please don't ask about my injury.
Hmm.
Because if you ask me, I cannot tell a lie.
Okay.
And if I tell the truth, I will be getting these people into problem.
Hmm.
Okay, and he says, because I know anyway you know it, but today don't ask me about this. You know, just get me out of this predicament of having to put these people into trouble.
Hmm.
So then Swami was talking something to the other boy, you know, in Swami's presence. And suddenly Swami looked at this boy and asked him, hey, have you seen this Chenchu Lakshmi drama?
Okay, what is Chenchu Lakshmi drama?
Okay, there was some drama which was staged in front of Swami so many years back.
Hmm.
And Swami suddenly asked him, have you seen this Chenchu Lakshmi drama? So, you know, everybody was wondering why Swami is asking about this drama, just like how we were wondering.
Hmm.
And this boy said, yes, Swami, I've seen. Okay. And Swami continued, you know, giving a very meaningful smile. Only that boy knew, and only Swami knew, because that boy who actually took this fellow on the scooter, his name, you know, his surname was Chenchu.
Oh, okay.
And in a very, very cryptic way, Swami actually told him that I know you went with this fellow and I know this has happened, but don't worry, I'm not going to talk about it. You know, that's the thing, the small apprehensions, our small fears, Swami acknowledges and how Swami plays along, you know, literally.
That's what endears him to your heart. And that's what endeared Swami even in those days, you know. That is why many people who did not come to Swami did not understand what was happening. Swami often says, come, see for yourself, experience and then have faith. So many people would make conclusions like we do. You know, we have our own biases, we have our own preconceived notions. Based on that, we form our conclusions. That is what happened to Swami then. Because all those who came with the intention of experiencing him definitely had an experience and they believed. All the sincere seekers were granted. I am reminded of the story of a hermit who came from Badrinath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had done a lot of intense penance and tapas, and that was seen in his very face and demeanor. People felt a kind of light emanating from him. He was so bright, and the tejas that they call, you know, it is not a physical brightness. It is the light of wisdom,
right,
or the light of your penance that is showing. They felt this, and he came and he heard about Sai Baba. So that is what made him come to Puttaparthi. And when he came, he sat near the current day Satyabhama temple.
Mm-hmm.
It was there then also, we know, we narrated how Swami's grandfather, Kondamaraju. So he sat in the courtyard of that temple and he also had these powers, you know, these siddhis. He began to wave his hand, materialize kumkum, materialize vibhuti, materialize sweets. And so now those detractors of Swami who felt that, you know, Swami out of nowhere he has come and what is he, who had not experienced him, they started coming and, you know, becoming sycophants for this hermit. And they said, yes, you are the correct person who will teach a lesson to that arrogant and insolent lad. He thinks no end of himself and all this they started feeling. The hermit was not a person who was against Sai Baba, but he was very, his curiosity was piqued. So that was a time when one of these sons from the Kuppam family,
mm-hmm,
was staying along with Swami in the mandir.
Okay.
So as this boy was passing by, one of these people who were anti-Swami,
mm-hmm,
pointed out to the hermit and said, you know, that boy, he stays with Swami, you call him and you ask him. So this hermit called that boy, called this boy from the Kuppam family and said, Tell your Sai Baba, tell your Swami to come and meet me. In fact, I forgot to mention that even as this hermit came to Puttaparthi, Swami had issued orders that he should not be allowed into the mandir.
Okay.
So the hermit was, you know, he was a little upset, thinking, how is it that a person of his stature is not being allowed?
It becomes a license for you to say that, you know, Swami is scared of me. That's why he doesn't want me to.
Exactly.
You know,
and that license,
confront him.
That license was built upon by the other people also. They said, right, that is it. So therefore they started backing this hermit. So now this boy goes to Swami and he says, Swami, you know that hermit, he is saying that he wants to meet you. And so Swami said, why did you go that way? Don't go. Don't cross paths with him. And no need. I'm not going to come and see him. Sent him away with that. Now as I said, this hermit was from Badrinath. So he was a devotee of Lord Badrinath. That is
right.
Lord Vishnu at Badri. So that is why Badrinath, Lord of Badri. So Vishnu in a meditative pose, that's what it is. So he used to shout out Jai Badrinath. And once again he went and caught hold of this boy and said, why your Swami did not come?
Mm-hmm.
So as I said, this sadhu too had his own magnificent presence and that aura about him. So this boy got a little scared. He said, I will call Swami immediately. And he rushed back. And he said, Swami, I didn't go, but he only caught me this time. You do something, I don't know, he wants to meet you. Then Swami tells him, okay, tell him to come for bhajans today. Which means that ban on the sadhu was lifted. And the sadhu also said, okay, fine, I'm coming. So he attended, he comes for the bhajan. During the bhajan session, everybody notices that the sadhu is so lost in the singing. In fact, in the middle of the bhajans, Swami stops and calls out for the sadhu, mm-hmm, and tells him, you start singing bhajans. And the sadhu sang very melodiously. He sang 3-4 bhajans on his Lord Badrinath. After singing that, Swami said, it's time for aarti. And this boy who used to stay with Swami, he was called to give the aarti. Immediately after aarti was over, Swami walks away. And this boy sees that this hermit is in throes of great ecstasy. He is almost dancing in the mandir. In fact, he comes running to this boy, and this sadhu, this hermit, was very well built. He was mustached, he had a long beard, and he was very strong.
Right.
He lifted up this boy, put him on his shoulder, and began to dance, shouting, I have seen my Badrinath, I have seen my Badrinath, Jai Badrinath, Jai Badrinath. He was in ecstasy. You know, literally, as Swami had said, come, see, experience for yourself, and then have faith. He was so thrilled with that experience. And as he was dancing, he carried this boy on his shoulders back to his place where he was near the Satyabhama temple. And then he told the boy, tell Swami that my life's objective is achieved. I'm leaving tomorrow. I want nothing else. And this when he conveyed, Swami then told the same thing. Swami said, no, tell him to stay. Tell him to stay for at least one more day. And the next day, Swami personally invited him, had a feast prepared, fed the sadhu personally, and then sent him away with tears of bliss and great fulfillment and joy in the heart. Everybody who came to Swami seeking the truth or wanting to know with some sincerity in their heart were rewarded beyond measure.
You know, even as you're talking about how Swami touched this sadhu's life, There's another mention of one of the sannyasis who came to Swami in this very chapter in Satyam Shyam Sundaram, That of Swami Sachidananda.
Okay.
He was a person, he was actually a very pious old man, he was 70 odd summers old. And you know, when he came to Swami, he was actually one of the administrative staff of an ashram.
Okay.
In Rishikesh. So when he came to Swami, you know, Kasturi writes, can you imagine, here is Swami who is a 21-year-old or 20-year-old. And here is a 70-year-old man who, as you said, you know, you could see on his face the tapas that he had done and the penance that he had undertaken. That glow was there, that wisdom was there to be seen. And here was Swami patting him on his back and giving him advice. And you know, what Swami told him was very beautiful. He said, why are you getting caught up in all this administration and ashram politics and all that? You know, why are you getting into organizing movements and all? Give up all this. Why do you do all this? He said, you know, retire into a cave in the Himalayas and you sit there and you do your sadhana there. And Swami said, I assure you that the vibrations that yogic practice creates, that will penetrate the walls of the cave and come and benefit the people around. Much more than you, you know, trying to organize spiritual movements and retreats.
Wow, that's a very strong message for all of us too, Prem. It shows us the importance of personal sadhana. We often feel that, you know, we have to go out and change the world out there, change the nation out there. The advice that Swami gave to Sachidananda, as you said, it shows that if we do our sadhana sincerely, that is enough, because it cannot be the benefit of that sadhana cannot be stopped by the walls, cannot be stopped by anything.
Absolutely.
It will reach. That is how Swami's glory has spread, right? I mean, in spite of all the negative publicity that happened, nothing could stem the flow of visitors, and nothing stems the flow of visitors even today. Just the other day in the store, you know, as I was helping there to sell the DVDs, Sai Blossom products, a group came and they were all from Sri Lanka. And all of these devotees have come for the first time. They came to know about Swami after the Mahasamadhi. I mean, what makes people, they are not very rich people, they are middle income families, come from far off Sri Lanka. It is definitely far compared to Madras, Bombay or Bangalore, from Sri Lanka, and they are coming to India just for the sake of Puttaparthi. They are not coming for the sake of Mumbai or Chennai, not to see Agra, not to see the Taj Mahal. They are coming to India just to visit Sai Baba, about whom so much negative is going on, because they said that the attraction was so tremendous. That is Swami's magic, because he came for individuals. He doesn't care for institutions, nor does he care for his own name. He just cares for the growth, the spiritual growth of individuals, and that he will achieve with us or in spite of us.
In fact, you know, talking of Swami Sachidananda, you'll be interested to know that he was a person who was present with Swami when that incident in Bhopal happened.
Oh, Swami shouted, the "Don't shoot!"
Don't shoot.
Yes.
He was a person who was with Swami, and it actually happened in Kodaikanal. That's what he narrated. So he had the opportunity to spend about 3 weeks to a month with Swami in Kodaikanal. And then he came back, you know, Swami asked him to speak.
I remember, because when we discussed about the telegram, we spoke about this. And in fact, Swami Sachidananda, I forgot the exact date now. I think it is something like 28th August or September in 1958.
Right, 58.
That was when the Kalpavriksha, I mean the Vatavriksha.
57. Right.
1957. The Vatavriksha was...
Swami planted the...
Yes. And during that occasion, Swami Sachidananda said, "Swami, I must narrate this incident." And that was when that this Bhopal telegram incident was narrated for the first time in Swami's presence.
He narrated, that's what he said. He said, "I have absolutely no doubt that Swami is that Sarvantaryami who is there in each one of us, who is there everywhere." And then he narrates this incident. What
he said, and he says that this is something amazing, because the greatest of yogic practices culminate in teaching you Kaya Pravesha, where you can enter another's body.
Right.
But here he's saying this is Kaya Srishti, creation of body, and not one, three, along with all the external paraphernalia, that is the bag, baggage and luggage. Yes, yeah, thank you for rekindling that memory of Swami Sachidananda.
And that was the thing, you know, that is the variety of people Swami was touching. Because here we spoke about that Kuppam family, Swami was going and spending time with them. We spoke about those families in Bukkapatnam where, you know, Swami, so beautifully Swami went and slithered and slept on the same bed, you know, so stealthily. And the other incident which Kasturi narrates, you know, which happened during this period, is once when Swami went to Chitravati sands with the devotees. Swami went into one of the hills on the other side of Chitravati, and Swami just walked into one particular cave or one particular clearing over there. And there, there were about 17 dacoits or thieves who were sitting in, you know,
sharing
themselves, sharing the booty of the day.
Oh, okay.
And they were really surprised to see that Swami is standing there. And Swami did not, you know, shout at them or anything. Swami materialized vibhuti and gave it to each one of them. And Kasturi writes that that was enough. When they received that vibhuti and they ate that vibhuti, they felt that this was not an ordinary person. You know, that was how instantly Swami gave them that faith in what Swami was. And then Swami advised them. He said, "Why did you do all this?" And Swami persuaded them to come back into the village and settle like the other villages. And till the end, there were people that who had taken up professions which were more righteous, and they would participate in Swami's festivals and come to Swami for many years after that.
When you listen to these incidents, Prem, it reminds you how Swami had said that in the past ages, there were defined people who were good, defined people who were bad. So some people had to be killed, some demons were killed, and that's all. in this age, in Kali Yuga, everybody has traces of goodness and traces of badness. There is good and evil in the same person. So if you go about killing the evil person, evil people, you will be wiping out the entire population of the earth. And therefore, I have come to destroy the wicked in you using the weapons of love. And that is what, you know, even this transformation story of the 17 dacoits teaches.
And you can even go back to that letter which Swami wrote, right? Every point you can see it happening immediately. Swami said, I have come to correct those who are straying away from the right path, to bring them to the right path. That's what Swami is doing, to give people what they lack. And you know, if it was even spiritual advice of the highest order, even that Swami was there to give. And that was the story of Satchidananda which we happened. And every other people came to Swami, and I think we will, if we have the time, we will be narrating how Swami, this was the time when Swami was doing Jesus-like miracles. You know, when he went out into the crowd and was curing people in front of huge crowds and drawing attention.
Well, so many more stories, Prem. You know, I have also got at least 5-6 more on the list. Dear listeners, don't go away anywhere. We'll be right back with you with many more such stories, because these years are the years where Swami literally exploded in terms of physical miracles and leelas, and we will enjoy more of that, more of them after this little break.
Thank you.
Wow, that's a beautiful and nostalgic bhajan, you know.
Yeah, I never get to hear that style of singing.
Right.
This bhajan itself is so beautiful and we get the chance to hear it. But this kind, this style of singing, it really takes you back to those days.
Then, you know, no wonder, just imagine that beautiful setting in old mandir, Swami sitting there. Swami every now and then coming down, sitting with the rest of the devotees and singing along with them. You know, that used to be a practice for a very long time. Even during the Akhanda Bhajan, Swami used to sing a lot of bhajans.
Well, in fact, when you say sing along with them, in part 2 of the sing along, that is the second volume of sing along that has been released by Sai Blossom, because of popular demand, we have this very same bhajan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really wonderful, the footage that has been used. And yes, it is a highly recommended video, I feel, for any devotee's home sing-along, because it brings alive a bhajan session where a high-quality bhajan is sung, where you can follow it, at the same time have darshan, and it lasts for an hour, starts with omkaram, ends with aarti. Well, if we could take that as a little advertisement, and then we come back, yes.
Yes, and you know, coming back to this point of Swami doing a lot of miracles, as we said, we spoke of Swami correcting the people who were straying away from the straight path. We started with that incident. You said those 15 thieves who tried to come and steal the old mandir, and Swami brought back the procession. And the other one where Swami transformed these dacoits. You know, during that time when Swami was going to these places, when Swami traveled to Mysore, that was the time when Swami started visiting some places in the erstwhile Hyderabad state. You know, that was under the Nawab's regime.
Nizam's regime,
right. Yeah. During that time, Swami actually recognized many of the places, because those were places which Shirdi Baba had visited.
Oh, wow. Huh.
And I think during that was the time when the Rani of Chincholi and all were drawn to Swami, because they were all devotees of Shirdi Baba who had seen Shirdi Baba.
Correct.
And that was the time. And during that trip, you know, Swami traveled extensively during those 2 or 3 years. And Swami went to Karur, Swami went to...
Oh, yes. Swami went to Kadalur.
Right.
Then,
District of Trichinopoly in those, you know, pre-independence days. During one of those trips, there's one incident, very beautiful one, where, you know, there's this huge entourage of cars when Swami's traveling to this town.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the cars runs over a boy who runs, you know, across the road.
Oh,
The car has just run over him and he's kind of very badly injured.
Mm-hmm.
So spontaneously somebody informs the police and there's a lot of hullabaloo happening and this boy is taken to a house. And there Swami comes and cures him. And by the time police comes, this boy is happily sitting up and running around.
So what is there to register? Huh?
Right. And you know, those were the small things which Swami was doing, because you know, as we described, Swami was so difficult to accept as somebody who is, you know, a spiritual master, the way Swami was appearing.
And even, you know, day-to-day things that he would do. For example, here is an account of one Muslim taxi driver, chauffeur.
Mm-hmm.
He goes by the name Abdul Sattar.
Okay.
He said, again, you know, it brings back that same thing about Swami being the God of small things. That small thing that totally won his heart. Okay. So he had two experiences. One was when he was driving and taking Swami to Kadalur.
Okay.
Swami insisted on sitting in the front next to the driver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always considered that you don't sit with the chauffeur, you sit behind.
Right.
He felt so touched with this single act of Swami. That was not enough. Whenever they would drive, apparently every hour or so, if Swami comes across some scenic spot, Swami would just stop the car and just take a walk in that place, enjoy the nature, and then get back in the car and proceed. He did it almost even till the 1990s, after which it became impossible for him to take luxury of such a walk because he became too popular and too famous. So once when he did that, the other hosts who were traveling along with Swami, they quickly served some food on the leaf for the driver, because they felt that wherever Swami stops for lunch, we will be having lunch. How can the driver eat with us, you know? So they said, you quickly have your lunch. Go to one side, have your lunch and come back. So Abdul said that he went to one side and he was quickly eating, when suddenly Swami appeared out of nowhere, stopped him and said, you come here. You drop that leaf and you come here. So he said that Swami wanted to leave maybe. So he stopped eating whatever he left it and he sat in. And that time he said Swami was admonishing the hosts. He was saying There are only two castes in the world. That is male and that is female. That's it. Everybody is equal. All the males are fathers, all the females are mothers. That's all it is. So no other division is necessary. This is all the division that God has made as father and mother. So that is what it is. The rest all the children, this is the advice that Swami gave them. And Swami said, we will stop for lunch and we will all eat together. Swami invited Abdul to sit by his side and have lunch. And he was so moved. And in those days when it was so strict, all these things, he said, he felt that this must be God. And that got cleared, and that, you know, that statement, he was immediately verified, because Swami pointed to a custard apple tree, a custard apple plant, you know, what we call a Sitafal.
Right.
He said, go fetch me that fruit. He got the fruit, he took it in his hand and said to Abdul that you have it. Abdul was again touched, because the first person whom Swami was giving was him, rather than the guests who were supposed to be higher and everything. Rather than his hosts, I mean,
right,
who were higher and all that. And the minute Swami gave that custard apple into his hand, he saw it had become an apple. And, you know, that is the kind of miracle that we think that God does. But by the time this miracle was done, the actual miracle of the transformation of the heart had already happened to Abdul Sattar. And a similar kind of thing happened when Swami was, you know, traveling to Bandipur. This was a certain Ranjot Singh, we spoke about him. He was also working as an officer with the government. And he had invited Swami to travel along with him. So he wanted to take Swami to Bandipur. He had got his chauffeur and he had got his car. And they had come to Puttaparthi. So Swami was traveling in this car. And as they were traveling in the car from Puttaparthi to Bangalore, on the way the car suddenly stopped. And there was no petrol in the car. That is what the driver said. Swami asked the driver to get a bucket full of water. So he goes to a nearby pond and gets a bucket full of water. Swami puts his finger into that water and tells, pour it in the car and let's drive on. The driver thinks that this Swami has gone mad. So he looks at his master, that is Ranjot Singh, and he says, sir, what do you want me to do? Ranjot Singh is firm in his faith. He says, what are you looking at my face for? He has said you do it. So now the driver thinks that both his master and that other guy, that whoever he is, seems to have gone off their head. He pours water into the car, and then Swami sits and says, let's start the car now. The car starts and they drive on. And this driver is, you know, already bowled over by this. Again, I don't know what was that fascination Swami had for apples. In Bandipur also, when they are staying in the visitor's bungalow, Swami points out to one croton bush. If you have seen the croton plant, it has huge red leaves.
Right.
It bears no fruit. So Swami told the driver, go and cover that croton plant with a sheet, a bed sheet. Strange request. The driver does that. After 2 minutes, Swami tells him, you go remove the sheet. When he removes the sheet, to his pleasant shock, that croton plant is bearing apples. Swami says, get those apples. So he plucks the apples and gets which Swami cuts and distributes to all. So like these little things Swami kept doing, and it just kept winning hearts over, and it, if not winning the hearts, it definitely made people feel that there is something amazingly phenomenal and different about this master.
You know, even as you're talking about Swami touching the life of that driver and all, there's so many incidences, you know, we spoke about how Swami visited that cobbler's house. You know, that was the thing which Swami was doing constantly, and, you know, one thing was he was touching the driver's life, and the other way Swami was sending out a clear message what kind of behavior Swami likes. You know, what, if you're going to call yourself a Swami's devotee, how you have to treat the people around you, how you're supposed to treat the people who are, you know, who are under your working for you. That was something which Swami was clearly doing. And you know, one thing which I remember was, it seems Swami used to be even physically allergic to the smell of drinking and smoking. You know, not only morally Swami would say, don't do it, it's not right. Swami used to be physically allergic to it. So much so, it used to happen in the earlier years, if Swami gives an interview for somebody and that person has had a smoke before coming for that interview, the whole day Swami wouldn't eat. Because Swami say, my stomach is upset because I had that smell.
Oh, okay.
You know, that Swami used to be physically averse to that. And it seems once when Swami was traveling like this, you know, Swami had gone to a particular town. there one of the fellow who was very curious about Swami, who just saw Swami in a car and he was just wondering what Swami is, and he was smoking these, you know, country made, what do you call it, BDs. You know, he was smoking and he was a, you know, villager. He just peeped into the car where Swami was sitting and literally smoked into the car. And the moment he did that, everybody saw Swami's face, you know, contorting, and Swami couldn't take it. And the people who were around, Swami's devotees who saw this and who knew how Swami was, you know, allergic to the smell, caught this fellow and gave him a sound thrashing. You know, beat him up, and he was wondering what happened. You know, I'm just smoking, I smoke every day, and everybody's beating him, and Swami immediately got out of the car, and Swami stopped the crowd, Swami told no hitting him. And on the other hand, Swami said, you get some fruits from the car. You know, they always used to have that basket of fruits. Swami asked them to get that basket, and Swami gave it to this boy. Swami said, you take this. And, you know, put an arm around him, and very softly Swami told him that, see, don't do this, it's not good for you. You're so young, by the time you get old, it's going to hurt you. And Swami got into the car and went away. And the moment the car went away, this fellow fell flat on the road doing sashtang, you know, in the direction. And he got up and everybody was asking what happened. He said, no sir, I won't smoke anymore. You know, nobody has told me so lovingly, and I'll be a fool to continue with this habit. You know, that was the thing with Swami. You know, we look at all these as miracles and incidents, but all the while, as you said, small things, Swami was just making his way into the hearts of so many people.
And that was happening because even in these small things, he showed his omnipresence, his omniscience and omnipotence.
Absolutely.
I'm reminded of another incident, a very significant incident in fact. You know, in 1947, India won her freedom.
Right.
And after that, all of us who have studied Indian history are aware that Sardar Vallabhai Patel, the Iron Man of India, started upon a very ambitious project of amalgamating all different states to constitute the Indian Republic. That
The situation was that the partition happened and Pakistan and India came to be, and all these princely states had the option of either joining Pakistan or India. And on paper, I think there was that clause that if they wanted to be independent, they could be. The choice was theirs. So many of these princely states actually wanted to be independent. They wanted to keep their sovereignty intact.
And they wanted that style of rule or monarchy. They wanted the monarchy to continue.
You know, they didn't mind giving their loyalty to one of the countries, but they wanted to keep their kingdom and that kingly life.
And that is what Sardar Vallabhai Patel recognized as disastrous for India as a country. Because in the middle of the country, there are separate kingdoms.
And there will be territorial battles.
Territorial battles is one thing. Apart from that, the rules and laws will be different because the kingdom has its own rules and laws.
Yeah, and you cannot impose a central law.
In fact, it is said that we were speaking about the Nizam's kingdom. You know, even to this day, that region which belonged to Nizam, it's not that it doesn't have its share of rich people, but even to this day we can see the impression that has been left behind by the feudal system that existed. Because the rest of the country, though it was ruled by British, you know, the British brought in the modern system of education, and there are some positives, many positives that the British too brought about. So education and all this that is there in the other part is not there in that region which was formerly Nizam's kingdom.
Okay.
We see that left behind even to this day. And Sardar Vallabhai Patel recognizes, and that is why he began this amalgamation of states. Now, almost 17 of these princely rulers, people who were ruling these princely states, they feared that, you know, because Sardar Vallabhai Patel had the Indian National Army behind him and he was using it to integrate all the things. So they did not want this to happen. So guess what? In 1947, all of them came running to Swami in Puttaparthi. Almost 17 rulers.
Oh, okay.
17 such princely state rulers. They were, imagine, that many number were there in South India itself. None of them were from the north. But these 17 rulers came to Swami saying, Swami, there's this Sardar Vallabhai Patel who is going about doing this. Please protect us from him. Swami did not give them any, you know, any reassuring word as such. He kept, you know, talking about different things, other things, everything other than this thing that they wanted to talk about. Finally, when they pressed Swami for an answer, Swami said, in a few years' time, all will be well. Now they assumed that this meant that in a few years time the Sardar Vallabhai Patel and his energy would go down, his enthusiasm would go down, his movement will die down, and we will continue to be kings of our own little states and provinces.
And I think we should also state that Sardar Vallabhai Patel was one of the leaders whom Swami spoke so highly about. You know, even in the later years when the MBA course started.
Exactly.
Swami used to speak of him as one of the leaders whose leadership qualities were worth emulating.
And foremost among them was determination and the sense of oneness, right, unity that he propagated to everybody through his actions, not mere words. So coming back to this, so when Swami said that all will be fine in a few years' time, they all assumed that Swami is meaning that we will have our kingdoms back, safe, right, with us. So they wanted to celebrate it with a feast. So they requested Swami for a feast to be arranged. Swami gave them permission, after which they immediately made arrangements, you know, from their respective kingdoms. They had the best of cooks coming in, and all the materials that were needed, most of them came from Mysore.
Mm-hmm.
So all were brought in, and there were a massive banquet was prepared. In the meanwhile, all the royalty had their own secretaries and under secretaries and people who were attending on them. Swami went to the area where the feast was supposed to be hosted. Over there he saw that there were two kinds of arrangements. One was on a platform where all the royalty would sit, and then on the floor where all their secretaries, under secretaries and the normal people would sit. What Swami did was, first of all, he had all the plates, the gold and silver plates that had been served, he had them removed.
Okay.
After having them removed, he told to replace them with normal leaves. And then he asked for all the common people area to be cleared.
Mm-hmm.
Then he called a few workers, he called the secretaries and undersecretaries, and told all of them to sit on the platform that was meant for the royalty. And having done that, he then called the royalty in. And when the royalty came, they were shocked. Where were they to sit? There's no place on the ground where they can send away these people, and all their places are occupied by this and authorized by Swami, so they could not tell anything. Swami told all of them to pick up vessels and start serving. And that is what they did. So this was a very surprising sight.
The common people were sitting and having their food, and the royalty was serving them.
Yes.
Or at least were asked to serve.
And that was when
they did serve.
And that was when, yeah, that is what, leading to serve, you know. That was when Swami began to clap, they say. Swami clapped his hands and then said, "Times have changed, times have changed." You know, those few words from Swami proved so prophetic, because within 3 years from then, the Indian Republic came into existence. All these princely states were abolished, they were amalgamated into the country, and that is how the Indian Republic came into existence in 1950 on the 26th of January.
Right, so that was the time when the democracy came in, and for the people, by the people.
Exactly.
And you know, that is what, you know, makes this period so special, because it was a very, very important era, even politically, in the world stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where India as a democracy was being born. And that was a time when actually everybody was wondering, will this country hold on together with such ethnically different units making one country?
Mm.
And to see that Swami was there in the center of it, and
as the glue,
you know, very beautiful, really.
Yeah, Prem, there are, as you said, you know, there are so many more stories that we can go on, but the time in our studios is 1:55. Dear listeners, this fortnight of Satyam Shyam Sundaram comes to a close, but within one more fortnight, we will start the next fortnight, and as always, Swami's glories and stories are endless. We will go on and on. The next fortnight, of course, we will be coming back to something like discussing on certain themes, after which we will take back Satyam Shyam Sundaram. Hope you enjoyed this segment filled with Swami stories, and our hope is that just like it happened to Sage Vyasa's heart, just like it has happened to our hearts, your hearts too feel light, happy and nice listening to the stories of Swami. Do write in your feedback to us at listener@radiosai.org. We will be eagerly awaiting any of your comments and your feedback, and we shall try to incorporate them into our satsangs.
Definitely.
In the future.
Whatever you think about this Satyam Shyam Sundaram series, and also what you would like us to discuss about in the series, in the satsang which is coming, so anything that you can write to listener@radiosai.org. offering this a humble effort of us at Swami's lotus feet and expressing gratitude for giving us this opportunity to recollect these beautiful stories of his life. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is
Arvind from Team Radio Sai, and we sign off placing our most humble gratitude and love at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram. We will leave you now with a song, on the other side of which you will be joined in by Brother Chandu with Love to Love.